Rokan Show with Anna DeBlancis right here on 720 WGN. Always striving to bring you what's happening in Chicago and around the world right as it is occurring.
That's right.
And Lori Lightfoot is with us, and she was running the she was on with us last week, and I appreciate your time, Lori, and you're joining us back again here in short order because the Independent Police Review Authority, which you helmed, is now turning into the COPA, which is a different organization, which would also, in theory, have oversight.
Civilian Office of Police Accountability is what it stands for.
And as you understand it, what is the difference between your organization and what this is now becoming?
So just to clarify, I was the head of OPS, which was the actual predecessor of IPRA, which will now be succeeded by what I understand to be COPA. So they are different organizations, different eras and time periods. I think we don't know yet what the ordinances looks like, so it's a little hard to kind of speculate about it. I think that there is an effort being made to have the new organization be formed in a way that's consistent with the recommendations of the task force. And a couple of the important things that we recommended is both physical and literal separation from the police department. Unfortunately, when IPRA was stood up in 2007, a number of these things that would have given it separation from the police department were not put in place. I mean, basic things like the email system is the same system used by the police department. Evidence collection is done by CPD evidence technicians and not IPRA's own entities. Evidence is stored by the CPD evidence technicians. And when a case is closed, the closed case doesn't go to the storage unit controlled by IPRA. It goes to the Bureau of Internal Affairs. So as a practical matter, there are, I think, both optics and substantive ways in which IPRA is not as independent as it should be. And frankly, you know, one of the things that we specifically recommended as part of the task force process that I'm hoping will be part of the ordinance is that it has to have a dedicated funding source, not unlike, frankly, the IG has, so that the head of the new organization doesn't have to go and say, Mother, may I, every single year without some sense and guarantee of what the bottom line resources are going to be, and that, frankly, the organization is properly resourced.
Well, Lori, let me ask you this, though. How expensive would that be to have basically a parallel investigative separated, walled off investigative and I suppose also, you know, crime labs and all the other things that go along with that, that would be looking at these cases? Because theoretically, almost any case that the police get involved in would potentially at some point have to be determined. And at what point would that be determined to be something that would move to your, or to that kind of an office?
Well, look, there's been parallel jurisdictions going back to the formation of OPS in 1974. So the question is, what price do you put on having something that's actually independent, that actually will have credibility with people who are calling up and making reports, and frankly, to the larger community of Chicago that feels like its taxpayer dollars are being wisely invested in a civilian investigative unit. The process that's evolved over the last 9 years since IPRA was stood up hasn't worked. So, yes, when you make change, you're going to have to spend some money. If you're having the organization take on new responsibilities, be independent from, truly independent from the police department, there's a price tag that's associated with it. But it's important that happens for the reasons that we've talked about. You cannot put a price tag on the credibility of the new organization's ability to get its job done in the right way and win back the trust of the public.
Well, let me ask you about that, because I think restoring public trust really is a big piece of this. That so far where we are in this point in history, there isn't that trust that we need between police and mm-hmm. citizens. And this is all a rebuilding process. And I know you led the Police Accountability Task Force, where you made the recommendations for reform to our city leaders. And it'll be interesting to see what this ordinance looks like. We don't really know yet because it hasn't been made public. But from what we're hearing from the aldermen who have released a few of the details, the problems that they see is that financing thing we just talked about, but also mm-hmm. the outside legal, the ability to hire an outside counsel or independent counsel. Is that something important to you? And if so, why is it?
Well, that issue comes up in the context of both the operations of the Public Safety Inspector General and also in the context of the new civilian investigative agency. I think the place where it's most needed, and this is part of our recommendations, is when there's a subpoena that involves a public body or where you don't want to have to go to the law department because of potential conflicts of interest. That's where this issue, I think, really gets the most traction, and but is also complicated. You know, as I'm sure you know, there was a litigation that went up to the appellate courts on whether or not the current IG has the ability to hire his own lawyer. The court said no. We recommended as part of the task force with respect to the oversight agency and also with respect to the IG that that power ought to be there because of the potential conflicts with the Corporation Counsel, who represents a myriad of different clients, if you will, that sometimes are in conflict with each other.
I want to go back to something you said earlier I find pretty fascinating, which is this notion of credibility, right? Credibility within the community. And so you need to have the argument here that you're making, and I think a lot of people would, is that you need to have these parallel tracks. You need to have separated a civilian authority that, that does have oversight and that has its own investigative powers, and it's totally separate so that it cannot be influenced with by the department itself. But but even if you did that, would then you cause an issue of credibility within the police department? And would you, you know, so feeling as though they could go out and do their jobs, that's, I think, the first important question. And then, secondly, did the citizens really understand that difference? Is it is that nuance big enough that people will get it?
Well, let me take the last part of your question first. I think that there remains a challenge and an opportunity to continue to educate the public about these nuances, because I think most people really don't understand it and don't understand the differences. You know, frankly, the fact that IPRA, OPS, and apparently the new org are going to still be the party responsible for doing the intake of all citizens' complaints is confusing to people. If there's a case that come in and it's, it comes in and it's still going to remain a Bureau of Internal Affairs case and not a COPA case, the public face, the entity that places the public in fielding that complaint is still going to be COPA. And so people are going to think, well, why did I never hear from COPA? Well, you never heard from COPA because it was actually a case that was handled by the Bureau of Internal Affairs. But that's a problem that's going to linger and has to be worked out if COPA is still the public intake. You know, look, winning credibility within the police department for a civilian entity to do oversight and investigation of them, that is a very big, tough climb.
Right.
It has been a problem from day one. And it will continue to be a problem. You know, back in the day, I used to speak to recruit classes when I was the head of OPS. These are people who had been in the academy for a couple of weeks, and the level of hostility was off the charts. So that's learned, not something that they had any experience with. So
and it was learned quickly, is your point.
Yeah, it's learned by, you know, it's no secret that a lot of people that come on the job have relatives that were on the job, uncle, brother, father, what have you.
Right.
You know, we can have a debate about whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. You know, I fall in the category of thinking there's no harm, but with qualifications. But the truth is, I think the focus of the civilian investigative agency can't be on making buddies with people in the police department. I think they need to treat officers fairly. They need to be respectful of their due process rights, but they also have a responsibility to the public. And they need to follow the facts where they lead them and do the right thing based upon those facts. So that's got to be the focus. And hopefully if they do their job right, if they do it with credibility, if they're respectful of the rights of everybody involved, then they're going to win a measure of maybe grudging, but they're going to win a measure of respect from officers in the police department. But that can't be the primary focus of the civilian investigative body.
One of the concerns I hear from police officers, how can you have a purely civilian board really truly understand what it is they're dealing with. Is that a fair concern? Is that something you would...
I'm sorry, say it again?
That police officers would say a civilian board reviewing their work, mm-hmm. that there might be some troubles really truly understanding what they do. Is that a fair concern?
Well, I think that comment and that sentiment, I'll say, because I've heard that before, assumes that the civilian doesn't have any capacity to learn about the job, the challenges, the opportunities, master the general orders, and that's just not true. There are people who have been doing this work for a very long time who are expert at what they do, and I hope, frankly, that many of those people will carry on in the new organization as well. They should. So I just think that's a red herring that is easily overcome. And, you know, look, what we have in Chicago is a civilian oversight structure. That is not going to change. I don't think there's any argument that people are making that structure that's been in place since the mid-70s should disappear. I think what people are talking about is, how do we make it better? How do we make it fairer? How do we expedite it? The work that's being done in a way that's consistent with maintaining the integrity of the investigations. That's the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is just alarming. I know that we're very short on time here, but it's alarming. There's a story in the Tribune today about the problem. Actually, there's a story. I believe this started in the Washington Post. This story about Chicago violence, and it was an analysis of it by a university. And the Tribune is copying that, or is distributing that Washington Post story, which gives it more gravity, actually, when you think about it. One of the things that they think is, because this is the most violent August in 20 years in mm-hmm. Chicago,
right.
is one of the factors in that is that police are not doing, they're not getting out of their cars as much. They're not making as many traffic stops. And we've seen that all year round here, all year since the beginning of the year. Month by month, and in part because they are concerned about what's going to happen if they do have a violent incident with a citizen, and are they going to lose their jobs? They'd rather clean up the mess afterwards than you know get embroiled in it. And you're hearing cops anecdotally say that, and that's what this study with this university analysis of this was. So I guess that's part of the complication here. That runs, and I know your job was to look at guys and men and women on the job who didn't do the right thing, and I suppose that the cops, how do we bridge this gap so that the police as quickly as you can possibly do this, so the police feel the good cops who want to do the right thing feel protected.
Well, you ask a very big and important question, and I'll try to do it justice in the time that we have left. I think, look, we have to realize that we live in a time in which everything that everybody does who in public life is out there in display. When you walk down the street, there are cameras everywhere. When you're an officer on the job, there are now cameras everywhere. That's the new normal. And so we have to make sure that people understand the reality of that and get themselves comfortable with it. And quite frankly, if they're not, then it's probably not the right job for them, because this isn't going to change. The fact that every single smartphone that people have, cameras on the sides of building, both by the city, by public and by private entities, that's just the reality. That is not going to go away. And it does complicate policing, because there are things about policing that are tough, and there's a lot of sausage made. But you still can do your job, and you should be doing your job in a way that is constitutional, in a way that is respectful of the community. And I haven't seen the August numbers, but the notion that you signed up for a job that is tough and complicated and dangerous, and that, you know, you were going to sit down and not do it and just react because we're afraid of being caught in the crosshairs of a community that's upset, or that something that you do might be on video, you know, that's the reality. And you got to do your job with that assumption and conduct yourselves accordingly in a way that's right with the Constitution and that's respectful of the community.
All right, Lori,
that's the new normal.
Appreciate your time.
Thank you
very much.
Lori. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. for being with us. 81 murders in August, you were asking. She was saying she didn't know what the numbers were. But
also, the number of shootings makes it the most violent. That's the thing.
Absolutely.
That's just
back to 1996 to find these types of numbers.